Happy Monday, Bucks fans. Victory Monday here on the Monday Morning Joe podcast, presented by Discount Garage Doors. DGDoors.com is the website, and Bill Curry Ford, just north of the stadium on Del Mabry Highway. Bill Curry Ford, serving Tampa and the community for 58 years. I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com. So happy to be here today. Thanks to all of you for reading Joe Bucks Fan and supporting what we do. We couldn't do it without you, and the numbers are just always extraordinary, mind-boggling, really. And really can't say thank you enough. We work hard, but we get all the appreciation every day, so it's worth it because of all your support with the podcasts and on the website. Now, I'm one of the Joes at JoeBucksFan.com. Lee DeKemper flies with me at Joe. BucksFan is the other Joe, as many of you know, but some are new to the podcast. You hear him on the Ira Kaufman podcast with me and Ira. And all our other podcasts are out there as well. Bobby Fenton on the Free Stretch every Thursday. Joe Bolts Fan is back on Fridays. Both of them are presented by Bill Curry Ford. You could subscribe to either one to get a free alert or this podcast. All the podcasts are at Google Play, iTunes, Podbean. Of course, Bucks Uncensored twice a week from Justin Pawlowski. And Todd Wright Fantasy Football Podcasts fire three times a week. So we're busy guys here on the podcast front. And again, thanks for your support. Now, it's Monday afternoon when I'm recording this. And, you know, I wanted to do it last night. And I always wonder about when to do the podcast. Of course, I got to be ready to do it and have the time to do it. And I also want to be sort of level-headed. I also like to watch the game a couple of times over versus the initial watch, because you always pick up different things, usually get a little bit less emotional, more analytical, but whatever. Here we are, 3-3, and it's great to win. It is great to win. Losing would have destroyed the franchise as we know it. Let's just call it what it is. You lose to the Browns at home, break their 23-game road losing streak, and send yourself into 2-4, it would have been the end of a lot of things for a lot of people, and would have gotten Team Glazer fired up to start their coaching search for the next coach. That's just reality. But the Bucks won, and winning, you don't get style points in the NFL. It's nice to break it down and look at, hey, are we a good football team? But the bottom line is the victories. You go through the whole game for the victory, and you just can't start worrying about style points and winning the right way to such an extreme level that you ignore that you won the damn game. Now, there are a couple of key points I want to get to about this game and this week. And you've probably thought about the game. You've probably listened to other people talk about it, whatever. The number one thing I think is most important about the Bucks right now is something Jason Light said before the game on the Buccaneers radio network. Light was asked about the shift to before the game, about the shift from Mike Smith to Duffner. Hey, even on the Buccaneers radio network, Gene Deckerhoff, where they ask a bunch of softball type questions, they had to address the biggest thing that happened last week. And Light said the following. He said that, of course, Duffner brings energy, and sometimes you have to make a switch, and, you know, you don't do these things lightly, and obviously blah, 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 whatever, all the corporate stuff. But then Light said that the energy from the team in practice this week was better than at any time this year. And you need to think about that. Before opening day, it was better than the energy before opening day. It was better than the energy after you had a massive shock-the-world victory on opening day and you're coming home to face the Super Bowl champs. It was better energy than that week of practice. It was better energy than the return of Jameis Winston to the starting lineup after a bye week and coming in with a new voice as a leadership voice in Jameis at the helm, and all the focus after the bye and beating the Bears and fresh legs, yet the most energy is after you fire Mike Smith. That cannot be glossed over. That cannot be oversimplified. And that's some serious stuff right there. That's how it tells me how much Mike Smith had lost his fastball, had lost the ear of his ears of his team, and was dragging the team down. Now, I had heard from before the season from a very reliable source, and I can't, you know, we hear so much at Joe Bucks Fan from great sources that it's part of being in this business as media. And again, I'm a fan first, but as media, I can't just sit here on the podcast and talk about rumors, and we don't write rumors at Joe Bucks Fan. I could write a daily rumors column that would blow people's mind, but that's just not going to happen. And doing this 11 years, I think you can imagine the sources that are built over 11 years. Even if you get one good source every other year with the team and somehow cultivate that and they feed you information, that's six people sending you stuff once you hit 11 years. But it's not that I'm saying that, oh, we have such amazing sources. But if you combine the stuff that we get and then Ira Kaufman, who knows everybody and talks to a lot of people and has pipelines to information from his 40 years in this town covering professional sports, something like 37 years on the Bucks. So there's a lot of information out there. And I was told before the season started that the players don't have a lot of respect for Mike Smith coming into this season, that he delegates too much and he's kind of getting a little more hands off, and just there's just not a good vibe. And going through training camp, watching Smith, yeah, he appeared a little more hands-off, a little more disconnected than some of the fire you saw from him previously on the field itself, on the practice field. And then I started talking to more people who were in the know, who backed up some of the things that I originally heard, but you still have to see it play out. And things can change constantly with the team. NFL's always a fluid situation. So I come out here and say in June or whatever that or May that the guys are tuning out Mike Smith and blah, blah, blah. Well, that can all be different, and it's not really fair to just start doing that. But here we are, Smith fired, Duffner in, and Duffner at 65 years old, very energetic guy. It's just the bottom line. A steady picture of energy, commands a lot of respect, and good teacher, whatever. Was he part of the problem with Mike Smith? Maybe. But ultimately, wherever you work, if the leadership is dysfunctional and the leadership is being tuned out, you can't just throw the rest of the staff out with the bathwater and say they all suck. It doesn't always work that way. Sometimes it does, but not always at all. And Duffner had a lot of respect inside the team. Now, I haven't talked to you since Smith was fired. I don't think so. Maybe I did. I don't even remember. It doesn't really matter. The point is, there was some serious change yesterday with the team. We saw it on the field. The defense was playing tighter coverage at the cornerback position. Somebody told these guys, just get up on them and do what you do best. The Bucks weren't chasing a bunch of guys running behind them. It was a beautiful thing. And sure, there were holes, and the defense was exposed up the gut in the second half, and teams are going to score points. We see it all, what's going on all over the league. But in all, the defense did a lot of great things. 2-3 and outs in overtime, and a goal line stand, which I broke down on JoeBucksFan.com, the anatomy of a goal line stand. If you don't remember everything that went down on that goal line stand, it's all there for you at Joe Bucks Fan. They had first and goal at the 6, the Browns did. Then they got a 5-yard penalty, and then they got a touchdown-saving tackle from Isaiah Johnson and good coverage by Grimes and I'm going out of order here, I think. Anyway, it doesn't really matter. Good coverage by Grimes and Davis and a little pressure from JPP that forced a Baker Mayfield throwaway. And then you had the run up the gut, and then the goal line stand with Mayfield. And look who's on the field there. Devontae Bond, who was just picked off the street. Will Golston is playing where Vita Vea should be. Why Vita Vea was not in there for a goal line stand at 6'5", 350, or 340, whatever he is. that's a little strange, and I'm a little disappointed that Vita doesn't look as good as he did in his first game, two games later. But that's a whole nother story, and he deserves some time to get used to things. But the Bucks did a lot of really good things, and I just can't sit here and go all negative, but there's plenty of negative on my mind, mostly with the coaching. And that's the disturbing part of this, is some of the coaching decisions are just absolutely mind-numbing. I don't even know how else to say it, but we're going to get to those, and some of them may even be not the things that you would think are so mind-numbing. Discount Garage Doors, their phone number is 1-866-420-DOOR, 866-420-DOOR. Understand this, they are there 7 days a week. They give you a free service call diagnosis. Means they'll come out to your house. If your garage door isn't working, they'll tell you everything that's wrong with it. They can fix it on the spot or show you their great selection of inexpensive new doors. But there's no obligation. So they'll come out and diagnose for you. They are the best in the business. They are a local company. They are serving 18 Florida counties. If you're listening to me, you can call Discount Garage Doors, I'm sure, 24 hours a day, 866-420-DOOR, same day free service call diagnosis. That includes the weekends. And it is a fantastic company. Use your Joe Bucks Fan discount code for 10% off. And go to their website, which has other coupons, and you can really shop there well. It's a great website. A lot of websites aren't so good, as you know. Discount Garage Doors, dgdoors.com. Joe Bucks Fan is your discount code. And I wanted to mention, of course, before I tell you about Bill Curry Ford, they have a fantastic charity event. It's a watch party right there at One Buck Place, November 4th, for the Carolina Panthers game, benefiting Johns Hopkins All Children's Hospital. Bill Curry Ford has been doing this 4 years now. It's a fantastic event, and it's family-friendly. Completely, your ticket gives you exclusive access to One Buck Place, and it's a whole cool thing, food and drinks. Local restaurants are participating again. It's to benefit Johns Hopkins All Children's Hospital. Auction items, games, a kids zone. Really cool. And go to BillCurryFord.com for information. You can also email watchparty@BillCurry.com and get all your ticket information there. As we get a little bit closer, I'll have more information on the website at JoeBucksFan.com. Bill Curry Ford, of course, that is your home for the nationwide lifetime warranty on new and pre-owned vehicles. All the details are at BillCurryFord.com. You can click on the big ad at JoeBucksFan.com. That'll take you right there to our page to get more of the specifics on that. New and pre-owned. New general manager Sean Sullivan is doing some great things at Bill Curry Ford. All the pricing you see on their website, the transparent pricing, just pick out a vehicle. Tell Sean Sullivan you like Joe Bucks Fan, you listen to the podcast, whatever. He will give you an additional $500 off. Just that simple. No games, no nothing. You don't even have to go to the watch party, but it would be nice if you did. Head over there just north of the stadium on Dale Mabry, BillCurryFord.com, and check them out. We appreciate their support. Such great supporters of everything we do. Bill Curry Ford serving Tampa for 58 years. How about that? Now, getting back to the game, probably one the thing that drove me nuts, late in that game, there was a punt in overtime by the Browns. And who's back there? Adam Humphries catches the punt. He loses 7 yards and off a good punt trying to make a return happen. Now, I initially thought, okay, well, Humphries is back there for the punt. It's overtime. DeSean Jackson must be injured, right? I mean, why else would you not use your most electric punt returner that everybody associated with the organization and probably anybody paying attention realizes is one of the very best punt returners in the game? But nope, they put Humphries back there. So, and then what do you know, late in the game, to set up what became the game-winning kick, was a completion to DeSean Jackson, so he could not have been hurt. I don't know what Dirk Cutter was thinking. And there were a lot of little things in this game, big things really, but probably the biggest had to be the end of regulation with timeouts in his pocket. Dirk Cutter set up a field goal for a bad kicker to win the game. Even took a little bit of a loss. Now, last week against Atlanta, we listened to Cutter say, well, you know, there aren't any plays really for the final shot from 20 yards out with 7 seconds to go. So we ran that trick play with Jameis running up the middle and lateraling it and, you know, the high school play that we all saw. So here we are yesterday at 2nd and 7 from the Cleveland 21 with about 40 seconds left. And the Bucs are playing for a field goal. And they're calling a timeout. And then Cleveland calls a timeout to ice Catanzaro, and he misses the 40-yarder. Come on, there's no play in the playbook, Dirk, at 2nd and 7. That's your best odds to bank on a kicker who isn't very good? That's not why you have Jameis Winston and all these targets. If you don't want to throw the ball, I get it. Or you don't want to do anything that's low percentage, I get it. But there's no reason why you can't spread him out and have Jameis run a quarterback keeper up the middle. He was your best running option all day long. Hadn't fumbled running 10 carries, 10 rushes, or close to it at that point. I mean, there's so many things you could do. You could throw a short pass. You're not in danger of losing the game. I mean, to get 10 yards to throw a quick out to DeSean Jackson or to Mike Evans at the sideline or something to pick up another 6 yards, you could justify that for your kicker who's not very good. But, man, I don't understand that. And it bit him in the ass. And he deserved it. And then, of course, the 59-yarder to win the game in overtime. I'm just glad they won. A weird game, though. Weird, weird game. A lot of strange calls. Probably one of the biggest strange calls is one that didn't happen. There you are, backed up in the end zone. And, of course, it would turned in early in the game, the first score, which was a Brown safety. You've got no quarterback sneak. Now, if you go back to Miami of last year, after Dirk Cutter had said, oh, we don't run quarterback sneaks, I believe in putting the ball in the hands of the guys who are paid to run it. Well, last year in Miami, the Bucs were backed up on the 1-yard line. What'd they do? Ryan Fitzpatrick, up the gut, quarterback sneak, got 2.5 yards, got some room. You bought the most expensive center in the league. You've got Ali Marpet that Dirk Cutter claims is a top 10 interior lineman in the entire league, including centers and guards on both sides. Yet here they are handing it off and basically asking for the safety. Not a lot of good coaching decisions there, things that you could really pin on coaching. And we could go on and on and on, but there are also a lot of good plays in the game. You can't discount what the defense was able to do. 5 sacks, even though it was a weird 5 sacks, because that was their only 5 hits on the quarterback. And that I don't think I've ever seen that before. You know, usually you're going to have at least double the hits on the quarterback as actual sacks, sometimes a lot more. But this was a 5-for-5 situation. So, hey, if they want to be efficient with it, I'm all for that. But I think one of the most bizarre things of this game, and probably something that just has to be fixed going forward, right, because we're all about winning the next game, is the offensive line. The effort is an issue. It really is. I don't believe that this is the 100% effort from Caleb Benenach. I don't believe that that's everything the guy's got. I really don't. And if it is, then what is Alex Kappa on the bench? I understand that he's a bit of a project. Donovan Smith, routinely, the offensive line shows up as not playing to the whistle. It's not that complicated. And this is going to continue, guys, unless there's accountability. Unless Dirk Cutter is willing to point at the film and say, you do this again, you're coming out for a series. I don't care who you are. You know, Ryan Jensen plays hard. He plays visibly harder than the other guys, and he was supposed to rub off on them. And frankly, it was the biggest red flag going when Ali Marpet talked about earlier this year, I think in training camp, and I believe it was on that current series that was sort of the Bucks version of Hard Knocks, Marpet talked about bringing in Jensen was the kind of guy who they really needed, he said, to bring that element to the team. Why do you need that element brought to you? Why can't you just generate it yourself or have your coach force it down your throat with accountability. The Bucks have big decisions to make on Donovan Smith and his future, and he's not a bad football player. His potential is excellent. His durability is phenomenal, and he does a lot of good things. But that effort is not there all the time, and it's up to the Bucks if they want to give him $16 million a year, a market value contract, and we have to worry about his effort. Yeah, that's just reality. I don't know what they're going to do, and not every player is perfect, but man, it's awfully ugly and scary for a guy who is in a contract year and doesn't want to put any bad film out there. And if you're tired, raise your hand and come out. I mean, if you're really exhausted and you can't play to the whistle, is it such a crime to give Mike Littke a series? Hey, we could sit and bitch all day long if we wanted to, but that is not going to be the case. And, you can carve it up and be negative all you want. It's too easy. The Bucks made it so easy to do that after this game, even though all the good things that went down in that victory and really the turnaround of the defense. If I can point your attention to, if you haven't read Ira Kaufman's column from today, he's got quotes in there directly from Duffner. Usually you don't talk to a defensive coordinator after a game, but Duffner, Lavonte David, MJ Stewart, all very interesting quotes about the effort level and a commitment to competing and just little things that, and Stewart, said that they really specifically talked about Duffner. So I would dive into that. It might give you a little insight into the mindset of what was wrong with the defense and where it is now. And it ties to what I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast. And, but with the O-line, as I was saying, after the complaining on the effort, the running game is non-existent. Besides Jameis, it was not there. And yes, we saw Peyton Barber get banged up, but they're just not getting the results. And it doesn't mean these guys totally suck. It just means that it's nowhere close to where it should be when you look at the rest of the league. And the Browns are bad against the run. They're one of the worst teams on first down against the run in the NFL. And yet the Bucs really couldn't do anything. Jameis dropped back 66 times. 66 times. 4 sacks, 10 runs, and the rest throws, obviously. Think about that. 66 times. All of a sudden, those two interceptions don't look as bad, even though they were bad. Today, Dirk Koetter said one was partially on a guy running the wrong route. You can look at that as absolving Jameis, or you can look at that however you want. But still, Jameis can't be throwing any kind of picks in overtime. And we gave him a C+ on JoeBucksFan.com. I think that's fair. The bar is high. You look around the league at what quarterbacks are doing, and he certainly did enough to win. Certainly not his fault that his head coach took the ball out of his hand, but, it was still a mixed bag. He ran well, and certainly this was not a game to say, oh, Jameis sucks, although some people will do it, not many. I think the intelligent people won't do that on a grand scale, although still you can look at that game and say, you know what, Jameis didn't look poised late in the game like you want a veteran quarterback to be, and Jameis is a veteran. And people can look at that fairly and say, Jameis, wasn't the guy we needed him to be late, like a lot of quarterbacks are. But, you can split that 100 ways. They won the game, and it wasn't Jameis's best. It certainly wasn't his worst, and he certainly wasn't the problem out there overall, in my opinion, against the Browns. Now, as far as that running game, Dirk Koetter, to take you inside his mind, you might have seen on Joe Bucks Fan, I had a story Friday night. Dirk Koetter said on his radio show that rarely, that was the word he used, rarely is a failure in the run game on the running backs. Rarely. So what does that mean? What does that tell you? It tells you that's the closest we've seen to Koetter pointing a finger at the line. Yet in the same breath, he tells us how great Marpet is. And I know they like Donovan Smith, and they just shelled out a ton of money for Jensen, and he's really not playing poorly. So what's going on? They've got tight ends that can block. They got to get that straightened out, because eventually dropping back 66 times in a game when you had the lead, in a game when you didn't have to throw like you did, that gets you one step closer to getting Jameis killed if you're dropping back at that rate. And The interceptions are going to come, blah, blah, blah. But here we are, 3-3. And if you want to be bitter at 3-3, I'd love to know what you thought they were going to be after six games. And I get that there are optimists out there that thought they'd be 4-2, but 3-3, you can carve it up however you want. It's really not that bad. Things change in the NFL all the time. And if they go out and win and beat a Bengals team that's at least beatable, for sure, next week, then, hey, it's all optimism all around for the Bucs. But they got to cut the interceptions. I threw something up on Joe Bucs Fan. Just looking at the numbers was interesting because I couldn't remember a team throwing two interceptions a game, which is sort of the rate the Bucs have been on with 11 through six games. And that story's on the website as well. Vinny Testaverde threw 35, and the team threw 36 that year, 30 years ago in 88. And nobody's really touched that. Nobody has touched that since. Favre and Aaron Rodgers had 30 in 2005. The Bucs are on that pace. It's a strange situation. They have to cut those back. Now, we learned about the loss of Kwon Alexander officially today. Bucs also lost linebacker Jack Sitchi, the seventh-round pick. So, their depth destroyed really very, very quickly. They picked up Devontae Bond off the street. He was in on that goal line stand, like I mentioned. And they're hurting now. But Kwon is the big story. Kendall Beckwith, when is he coming back? Who knows? But the guy has not played any sort of contact football since last season. So even if he can start practicing next week, what is this guy going to look like, you know, until he gets a couple of games under his belt? So you just can't bank on Beckwith at all, even though, you know, I hope he can come back, hope he can get his legs under him and maybe have a good final quarter of the season, but you can't bank on it. Maybe it'll happen. But the big loss is Kwon Alexander, and tough situation for the guy because he was in a contract year and now he's blown out his ACL. 9 months from today is pretty much the start of training camp next season. And a lot of guys are healthy in 8-9 months. Beckwith did it from an ACL. However, everybody's different. And the Bucs have learned that lesson with Lewis Murphy and with others. You can't predict how a guy's going to heal and or perform once he's does get back. Will he need that extra year to sort of get his leg back under him, which is what happened to Adrian Claiborne. So there are a lot of examples in either direction, and not everybody's Adrian Peterson or Kendall Beckwith 2017. But Kwon is an interesting case because, you know, they talk about him as being an emotional leader and the heart and soul of the defense, and he played great yesterday in the first half until he got hurt, but he's been very sketchy this year. And last year, he missed half the season injured. So it may be unfair. Some people aren't going to like it. And I'm a big Kwon fan. I spent a lot of time with him at the Pro Bowl talking. And, you know, I've talked to him many times as well. He's just a good dude, football first kind of guy. And, you know, you root for a guy like that. And I love the guys who are just all football, 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 football. I know Kwon has a child now and doesn't mean that's all he does, but that's sort of all he does. And anyway, the Kwon situation comes down to three things. First, in any sports situation, when you get hurt, your future is always about how does the guy behind you perform. That is always the bottom line. And the Bucs now have 10 games left to see what a Darius Taylor can do at middle linebacker. Or if a Beckwith comes back, let's say, and can play at full strength for the final 4 or 5 games, what does he do? That will all affect the negotiations with Kwon. Because if Taylor plays pretty well and the Bucs defense doesn't take a step backwards, which would be hard to do, but I'm basing it on what they looked like against the Browns, well, that changes Kwon's value. So wherever you are, whatever you're doing, your value is always based on who else do they got to play there. And Kwon's going to have to look at that closely. The Bucs are going to have to look at that closely. But most likely, and I think Ian Rappaport of NFL Network, who I don't like because of how he's reported, misreported some things, but Ian Rappaport made a great point that most likely the Bucs will try to slam Kwon into a short-term prove-it kind of contract right before the start of free agency. So think about it. This is October. We're looking at November, December, January, February, March, 4.5 months. We will be at the start of free agency next year. The Bucks will already get to see, how did the surgery go? How is his recovery going? They'll be able to check him out and get a sense how on track he is or isn't. And at that point, right before free agency, they can come to Kwan and say, look, we'll bring you back at this price. We'll give you guaranteed money. It's not a lot of money, but it's going to give you a guarantee. And we'd love to have you prove it here and give you a big deal next year. You want it, or you want to go on the market with as a guy who missed half a year with a hamstring injury, missed 4 years in his rookie season with a PED suspension, and is now with a blown out knee. So I think that's probably how it goes down, that they'll make a last second offer. Unfortunately, Kwan's agent is oily Drew Rosenhaus, who might play his share of hardball. But Mark Domenech recently said when he was on local radio that actually Rosenhaus is a guy, because he has so many clients, he is somebody who looks to make deals and get things done. So I think Kwan would like to stay. But of course, so much of this comes down to, is Jason Light back next season? And is Dirk Cutter back? And what kind of defense are they playing? If they come in here and they want to play a 3-4, maybe Kwan is on the outs. Or if they're looking to use the money elsewhere on Donovan Smith or other players or whatever, maybe they don't want to spend that big money on a linebacker. Because remember, we were all saying, hey, well, they can't pay everybody next year. When you look at Jameis's inflated contract next season and DeSean Jackson, whatever, maybe Kwan's the odd man out. And I think, I hate to sound cruel, but I think that this is a great lesson for the organization in many ways. I hate paying guys early. Make them earn it and then pay them what they're worth. I think that's the best formula. You know what? If the Bucks tried to sign all these guys early, Kwan was in negotiations. If Kwan signed his deal, he'd have a ton of money now. And the Bucks would be looking at, oh, crap, we've got a bunch of guaranteed money tied up in a guy with a blown-out knee. But it didn't work out that way. Now they signed Ali Marpet. Donovan Smith might be thinking now, well, man, look what happened to my guy Kwan, my draft mate. Suppose I blow out my knee next week. I'll be losing all this money. And the Bucks have already put $15 million a year to my agent and $41 million guaranteed. And I can get Nate Solder money, or a little less right now. So a lot of decisions out there. I don't know what's going on or what, you know, the status of the negotiations. Nobody really does except for those guys. But if I'm the Bucks, I let all these guys play it out. Make him earn it. Make Jameis earn it. Let him play out his fifth-year option. And then pay him what he's worth. It's not a tough concept. Plus, with the quarterback, you have him under control for the franchise tag, which, you know what? Baltimore used that very successfully with Joe Flacco. No lingering hard feelings. And look at how well they've been playing and how well they moved on off that. But I don't like paying guys early. I wish Kwan well. And I hope, as a Bucks fan, I hope the Bucks do what's best for the Bucks. As a Kwan fan, I just want to see the guy be successful. He's only 24 years old. He turns 25 in August. So the future is huge for Kwan. And if he can heal normally, which I'll put in the 9 to 12 month range, if he can heal normally, he's going to have a nice career, even if next year is one of those years where he's just sort of getting his legs back under him. If it's in Tampa, great. If not, somewhere else. At this point right now with the Bucks heading into Cincinnati, they're 3-3. You know it and I know it. The Bucks have to win one of these next two road games. If you're for real and all your offensive weapons are healthy, if you're for real, you'll find a way to win one of these games. I don't care which one it is. I think this is the easier spot this week in Cincinnati, although you better straighten out your pass blocking. And if Peyton Barber, who got banged up late in this game, is hurt, I think that could backfire. His pass blocking had been excellent, and I got my fingers crossed most for him, even more than Gerald McCoy, who I think they can survive with and thrive with for on the short term, although their run defense suffered without him. And I don't expect it to be as good with Adam, but some of these guys got to step up. That's why they got the great depth this offseason, spent the money to do it, and they found a way to survive on the D-line with a bunch of injuries. Well, I think the number one thing I can say about yesterday's game, I watched the game with my daughter, who is a pretty astute fan for a young kid, and said, that's the worst football game I've ever watched. And that's what it felt like. It felt like both teams were trying to lose. You could celebrate individual efforts, but it was just a crap-ass game. And I'm going to try to black that out of my head as much as I did the Chicago game, because I think they're both worthy of getting out of your skull, except for the celebration of the new defensive mindset, which is critical going forward. It was their only hope was to get rid of Mike Smith, just like I thought the only hope for the running game would be to get rid of Doug Martin. And now the running game is better, but it's not what it should be, but it's early. It's early. It's also early for the Mark Duffner regime, and things are looking on the up. I appreciate you listening to me ramble here on the Bucks. Definitely keep sticking with JoeBucksFan.com. We'll put whatever we can out there that we think is interesting, that makes sense. I really don't have the agenda that people think we have. Some of the commenters are pretty funny. But we're just trying to bring to you what we would want to read and what we think is interesting, and using our knowledge of the Bucks and our insight and our access, the official access, and really a lot of the non-official access that we get as well. Is there anything else I can tell you guys? Definitely watch Tampa 2 on JoeBucksFan.com with Ira Kaufman and Derek Brooks. Brooks really does a great job. There's always several meat and potatoes fun nuggets in there from Brooks that are both shows, the Q&A and the preview show, usually Thursdays and Fridays on JoeBucksFan.com or at the Identity Tampa Bay, which you should definitely subscribe to. It's a really cool weekday newsletter. It's a Jeff Vinnick, Tampa Bay sports and entertainment property. That's the same company that owns the Lightning. And it's nice to be doing some business with them. Other than that, try to enjoy being 3-3. Try to enjoy being able to walk around the grocery store this week and not have to hang your head because you're 2-4 and you lost to the Browns and you're a national humiliation. Just take the win, enjoy it. Realize that you get these crap wins and crap losses every year, and just look at this as a crap win. And maybe the Bucks will go out and get a better one this week in Cincinnati. They are certainly beatable, especially if the defense keeps everything in front of them. Cincinnati, they've put up a lot of points, but you saw them last night against the Chiefs. They were humbled, and that's not exactly a stellar Chiefs defense by any stretch. But tough place to play in Arrowhead, and you know what? The Bengals are going to do the exact same thing. Pretend that they can wipe out that film. Take a deep breath, look at the Bucks, and they'll pick their spots. And I think Jameis is going to bounce back. If I have to give you a pick for this coming game, I think Jameis bounces back, shows a little bit more fire, gets a little bit back to himself in his mindset, staying aggressive. And I just think the turnovers are not going to increase. I think he'll straighten it out in this game a little bit. If he can cut it down to one turnover, that would be wonderful, because he's doing so many other good things, and a lot of them go unnoticed. But I love the scrambling element to his game. Excellent, excellent element that I think hopefully Dirk Koetter and Todd Monken can explore a little bit more, especially as it's gotten better for quarterbacks, because they can't hit you when you dive forward. If you do a true dive, they can't hit you nail you like they used to, and that's Jameis has taken good advantage of that, sliding and the dive forward. It's been really nice to see. We saw Fitzpatrick do it as well. All right, Bill Curry Ford, visit them just north of the stadium on Del Mabry Highway, BillCurryFord.com, discount garage doors. Thanks to everyone. Keep listening to the Joe Bucks Fan Podcast, some Steve Isbitz. I will see you next Monday, hopefully with a fresh W for us to chew on out of Cincinnati.